This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
Joy, 94.9. Tune in a couple of times and you'll be moving in.
That's right, you will be moving in here to Joy, 94.9. Paul Anthony with you, the good police are in. Scott Davis and Gabby Tyack. Do you get tired of coming in every week?
Love it.
Yeah, I love it.
We look forward to it.
You do?
Yeah. From 10 o'clock, we get all tingly and excited about coming in.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you must, because you do a lot of research for it, so that's good.
Well, it's beneficial for us. It enables us to get our message out. You know, it's a great thing that Joy supported. It also ensures that each and every week that the community are able to hear about us.
That's right. And each and every week, if you'd like to say something to the guys, you can 0427JOY949 or send us an email on air at joy.org.au. Gabby.
Yeah, we have an SMS come in for Scott. It's so good to hear positive, out and proactive police. If only my old station had a crew like you, I might still be there. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for that wonderful message. And it's actually a really good segue into where we're going to from here, because we're about to bring Inspector Mark Keane into our conversation. And Mark works within our Human Resource Department, has responsibility for diversity issues within Victoria Police from a human resource perspective. But he was also a founding member of GALPEN, the Gay and Lesbian Police Employees Network. And I'm sure that he'll be able to relate probably very closely to that SMS.
Welcome into the studio, Inspector Mark Keane, 23 years on the force. My goodness.
Well, good afternoon, Paul. I'm an old-timer, I think. 23 years is a long haul.
Did you start as a teenager?
I joined straight from school, pretty much. I was 19 years old. I applied in January after finishing VCE, or HSC as it was then, and took until August to be inducted into the police academy. I have to say, a couple of weeks after my application went in, the Russell Street bombing occurred, and my family thought I was bonkers. but if anything, it probably made me even more keen to join.
Because of that reason?
Yeah, I suppose I'd like to have some sort of noble reason for joining, like helping the community, putting something back, assisting people. But I think, being honest, at the time I wanted some excitement, some adventure, and it certainly gave me that. Those more noble sentiments are probably what gives me more job satisfaction today. But back then it was a job that had variety, and I had friends that were in the police force, and I thought, wow, what a really interesting job.
Take me back to when you were a boy. Did you grow up thinking that you would be a policeman?
I was actually an Air Force cadet as a teenager, and I had this dream of flying F-111s. But I think as I got a little bit older and had some friends that were in the police force, that became a more realistic option. I never thought about not joining because I was gay. I think way back in the 80s, we're talking 1986, I think it doesn't matter what job you could have contemplated back then, the issue of sexual orientation could have been a potential barrier. So I just threw caution to the wind and joined.
You're stolen my thunder. I was about to out you on air. Did you know you were gay before you went into the police force?
I've always known. I think for as long as I can remember, and I guess that's the experience of a lot of gay men and obviously lesbians as well. I didn't know what it was called as a child. I just knew I was different. And I suppose I was probably about 12 or 13 when I finally was able to say, this is who I am.
Joining the police force, no doubt, all the way back in those years, it can't have been all that positive, being a gay member of the police force. But we'll get to that in a sec. Why are we still there after 23 years?
I get asked that a fair bit. The pay is good. The superannuation is excellent. My colleagues are nice. The organisation still gives me challenges that allow me to grow and to develop. And Victoria Police has been very kind to me in many respects, supported me through tertiary education. It's trained me with a number of internal courses. But I think the most important thing that makes me stay is the work itself. And I'm reminded of a job that I attended quite a few years ago now. I was working night shift out in Nunawading. And a hysterical woman rang police and said, look, I need police to come around. So I went round with my partner. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And she had a mental illness, suffered from paranoia, and had recently left a hospital. And the light globe in her living room had gone out. and she was absolutely terrified of the dark, and because she'd been institutionalised, she had no idea how to fix it. And she was also paranoid about the fact that she'd paid a bond, and she had this idea that because she'd turned the light switch on and off too many times, she'd actually broken something and she was going to lose her bond.
Yeah.
So while I left my partner there to console her, I just jumped in the divvy van, went round to the local 7-Eleven, bought a 99-cent globe, came back and put it in for her. And the look on her face, the relief and the gratitude, said far more than any words could ever say. And it was such a small gesture on my part, but it made such an important difference to her life. And even though for the rest of that week on night shift I probably did far more exciting things, like going to burglaries and robberies and thefts and assaults, that one incident just made the week worthwhile for me. And I think it's that sort of helping and keeping the community safe that keeps me in this job.
We've mentioned that you're gay, and I assume by that you're openly gay within the Victorian Police Force. Can you tell me what led to your disclosure of your sexual orientation?
Well, as I said before, I joined in 1986. It would have been 1989 that I first came out. And the reason for that was I found myself a boyfriend. Bit of scandal and drama.
The cabbage patch at the bottom of the garden?
No.
Not quite?
No, it was at a venue, but I'm not going to say any more than that. I wanted to share that with my family, and I hadn't come out to them, and so I started that process that a lot of people go through and told them, and sure enough, the world didn't stop turning and my life wasn't turned upside down, and so I very cautiously started to tell a few trusted colleagues at work, and I have to say that my immediate colleagues were very supportive. I've had a very sort of benign experience. There have been some negatives, but generally the people that I work with have been great.
I'd imagine you'd have to keep coming out, wouldn't you, a job like the police force?
Yeah, you do. It's a really big organisation. Obviously, a number of different police stations right across the state, and there are opportunities to move around throughout your career. So you can't just come out once. Every time you go to a new place, you have to start that conversation again. And what I found was really fascinating is if you're working on a divvy van, for instance, for someone with 8 hours, you talk about stuff. You're not constantly going to jobs, and there's some downtime where you're having a conversation with your partner, and you have different partners almost every shift. So when the conversation turns to what did you do on the weekend, have you got a girlfriend, that sort of thing, you've got three choices, I think. You either lie and change all those pronouns from she to he, you avoid the question, which makes for a really boring 8-hour shift, or you fess up and you actually be really upfront. And I found that experience was often the easiest way to deal with coming out, to be upfront right from the get-go. But it also led to some interesting experiences.
Well, do tell.
Interesting, I guess. I can chuckle about it now, but I remember halfway through a shift walking into the station, going down to the kitchen or dining area, and there were a group of police officers sitting around the table, and a sergeant was holding court, telling a gay joke.
That's what us sergeants do.
You tell gay jokes.
Yeah, we'll hold court.
Okay, yeah.
But what was fascinating was I walked into the room and suddenly there was death silence. And the sergeant turned around, looked at me very sheepishly. And I said, go on, continue. And he said, no, can't do that. I said, no, go on. And he wouldn't. And so I thought, look, these people are treading on eggshells. They've got no idea how to cope. And so I came out with my own gay joke. I'd tell it now, except it had a visual component and it's not really going to work well on radio. But that broke the ice and I took control or ownership of the joke. And really that's been my experience throughout my career, is to be very upfront, and it solves an awful lot of problems.
Just from my experience working in hospitality, I found that like when I go from venue to venue, it was hard enough for me to come out in one of the venues. And then as soon as you swap venues, you do it all again. But my thing was coming out to the locals, because it's the locals who kind of, they think they run the pub.
Yeah.
And so they're the ones that give you hell. It's not the staff. They're not the ones that are going to jump the counter and beat you up. Now, getting back, I just need to know, anything ever happened in the back of a Dibby van or...
No.
thought about it.
I can see where you're heading.
Mm.
Interestingly, at one police station where I worked, there happened to be, completely by a fluke, three out gay police officers.
And we're talking the mid-90s here, aren't we?
Yeah, we're talking probably the late 90s.
Mm.
The night shift roster, and you work night shift for a week, just by a fluke, all three of us were rostered to work that night shift. And alarm bells started to ring at the local headquarters. The superintendent called me into his office and said, so what's going on with the three of you working night shift? And I said, well, nothing. That's just how the roster panned out. And he said, well, what are you going to do? Is there going to be canoodling in the back of the divvy van? And I actually thought it was too funny to be upset at the time. But, you know, the world, again, didn't stop turning. We actually completed the night shift. We had a lot of arrests.
Can I add a little bit to that? Because I know that, I don't know whether you're willing to say it, but I'm going to say it because I've heard you tell this story before. But the same superintendent also suggested that because you were all gay, that you were slightly effeminate and to make sure that you did call for backup when it was required?
Yeah, this superintendent had some interesting ideas. This was the very same superintendent who, when Victoria Police first got email, at the end of the year sent a well-done message to all of the staff in his area saying, I'd like to wish all members and their wives a very Merry Christmas. And of course, there was an enormous backlash from women in the organisation who got into a bit of a tiz.
Oh, yeah.
So half an hour later, a new email came out saying, I'd like to wish all members and their husbands or wives a Merry Christmas. And at that time, I resisted the urge to send him an email saying, what about partners, long-time companions and significant others?
Yes.
Unicorns, yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day, though, homosexuality would have been illegal.
It wasn't illegal, I think, at the time that I joined, but there was certainly no employment protection under the Equal Opportunity Act. So I guess a lot of the people that I work with too, and particularly in senior positions within the organisation, had certainly been policing when it was illegal, and so their attitudes were still very much in that frame.
This leads us into Galpen then. What was it that caused the formation of the Gay and Lesbian Police Employees Network?
Galpen formed in about 1995. There were a number of police officers who'd been through some experiences of harassment. Some of it was quite nasty. As I said before, my experience was fairly benign. But Galpen was formed, I guess, to offer support to gay and lesbian police officers, but also to educate the organisation and to build some bridges with the broader GLBTI community. You might recall that back in the mid-90s, I think relationships between police and the community were an all-time low. We had the Tasty Raid and things just weren't travelling very well. So Galpen was the answer to that.
At that time, there was also the comments by the then police minister on the 7:30 report, which basically intimated that, well, not intimated, he said that Victoria Police was no place for gay and lesbian employees.
It was quite an uncomfortable work environment, even though, as I've said, my colleagues were supportive. I was still aware of this broader tension and heterosexism within the organisation. At one stage, I can recall a petition circulating in the area that I worked, asking members to sign it, and the petition was to go to the police association asking that gay members be basically suspended. Yeah, there was a lot of nastiness at that time.
And a lack of protection under the Equal Opportunity Act at that particular time.
Yeah, there was no recourse.
Mm.
Speaking of Galpen, what have they done or what do they do, I guess?
Galpen was a really interesting organisation. It had a fairly small group of perhaps 20 or so members who were very active, but being a network, it involved people that knew people that knew people. So even members of Galpen had no idea how many gay and lesbian members there were in the organisation. But it became highly political. Galpen had a disproportionate amount of influence because it managed to tap into the media. Gay cops tends to be a bit of a sexy story, and it provokes some really interesting emotive reactions, and so we were able to use that influence to provide stories to the media, and Galpen became, I think, a bit of a force to be reckoned with in its own right. But one of the first things we did was applied to the hierarchy in the organisation to attend a charity event, the Bobby Goldsmith Foundation. It was the Laird Charity Auction, and we appeared in uniform with a police motorbike, and we charged people $5 to have their photo taken with a cop in uniform and a motorbike, and we raised a lot of money. It so happened that at that event, someone took a photograph of all of us, and naively we all thought, you know, that's great. But a week later, it appeared on the front page of the Herald Sun saying, gay cops is the force with them. And even though I was out to my immediate colleagues, you know, this was plastered across the whole of the state. And that was really, I think, when an adversarial relationship began with Galpen and the organisation.
On the bit about Carnival Day and Pride March, initially they were rejected to march.
Yeah, we asked to march in Pride March a number of times in uniform, and we didn't get a very receptive response. We were allowed to participate in the Midsummer Carnival in uniform, but we weren't allowed to display our Galpen banner because it had the words gay and police.
In the same sentence.
Yeah, and I think people didn't want to see those two words together. We also weren't paid. We were allowed to be in uniform, but we were off duty. And that continued for many years. We actually policed the event, in effect, free of charge. But at the time, we considered that to be a bit of a win.
And important.
I'm assuming, because we're talking about it, something's obviously changed. What changed and when?
There had been some incremental changes throughout the 90s. We'd had the establishment of an equity and diversity unit. We had a first pilot program involving a gay and lesbian liaison officer. A lot of people will remember Melinda Edwards, who did a magnificent job in that role, and she's now doing great work up in Darwin with the Northern Territory Police. So we'd had a few things that had happened, but the big watershed moment, the time when everything changed, was when Christine Nixon was appointed as Chief Commissioner. She commenced her tour of duty, I guess, doing a bit of a whirlwind tour of the state, asking police officers, how can we make things better? What would you like to improve? And we invited her to attend the Galpin Annual General Meeting, and she was the first commissioned officer to actually take up that invitation. And during that AGM, I asked her, would you let us march in Pride March in uniform? And she hesitated for about a nanosecond and said, I don't see why not. The follow-up question was, will you lead us in the march? And she said, oh, ask me. So I said, will you lead us in the Pride March? And she didn't miss a beat, not even a nanosecond. Her very words were, I'd be honoured. And that was really...
The rest is history.
Well, yeah, I'm still...
She's obviously thought about this before, you think?
Well, she came from New South Wales, where New South Wales police marched in Mardi Gras, and I know that prior to her arrival here, she was with New South Wales police, and she took the salute from those police marching in Mardi Gras. So she'd had experience, and I just assume that she didn't think anything of it here.
I wonder, though, if she'd actually anticipated how courageous a decision it was, given the media flack at the time. There was an awful lot of internal angst within Victoria Police, and certainly... some of the high-profile people in the media world, shock jocks on radio, and I don't include you, Paul, in that.
It would have been hard to imagine the backlash, definitely.
Yeah, it was enormous. But you contrast that with the most recent Pride March, and there was barely a ripple, and it just demonstrates the depth of cultural change that's taken place in 7 or 8 years. It's been astounding.
Mm.
The two things I recall is when she first marched, the crowd just went absolutely wild, and then when she last marched, the crowd went absolutely wild.
She was a superstar.
And she had to do, shh. She had to tell everyone to be quiet.
That's right.
And it was pretty funny. Gabby, some messages have come in.
Yes, Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project has a very interesting one. I remember an unnamed young police member in the days leading up to the Sydney Mardi Gras waxing his legs in the front seat of a divvy van.
Oh, I wonder if that was himself.
I don't think the vans in Sydney were ever called divvy vans.
Oh, anyway. Okay, there you go. And a message for Inspector Keane.
That's right. Please pass on to Inspector Keane that he is a great public speaker and is a positive role model for the job. I'm so glad to be back working in Melbourne and listening.
Oh, who was that from? That's very nice.
No name.
No name.
There is a name.
There is a name.
Senior Constable Alley.
Oh, that's Listening to Joy.
Listening to Joy, Senior Constable Alley.
Well, I appreciate that.
We were talking about Galpin and the importance of Galpin, but it's my understanding that Galpin is no longer.
Well, that's true. Galpin was an important organisation in its day. It had its time and place, but as I was actually saying to Christine Nixon just prior to the most recent Pride March, she was responsible in many ways for Galpin's demise. After that first Pride March where we marched in uniform, a lot of Galpin members stopped coming to meetings and they said, you know, we actually feel really comfortable at work now. We've got a Chief Commissioner who has clearly said, you are welcome, who won't tolerate homophobia. And the reasons for Galpin existing completely evaporated.
How cool is that?
It was really cool, but I was left a little bit out on a limb. I'd been this sort of passionate crusader, an anti-homophobia zealot, if you like. And what do you suddenly do when you've got everything you wanted, when you realise that David has beaten Goliath? The intensity and the emotional investment doesn't go away. And so I was banging a drum for a lot of years after Galpin folded until someone pulled me aside and said, hey, Mark, we're all singing the same tune here. You can give it a rest.
And there wouldn't have been any big celebration either, I wouldn't imagine, because it would have all sort of stopped slowly. It wouldn't have just been a sudden stop, so you wouldn't have been able to have the big party and say, we've won.
No, it sort of fizzled in a very gradual way.
Mm.
But I'm really pleased that we no longer need to have a Galpin because it really is a very supportive, welcoming place to work.
Surely, though, as a diversity inspector, you could continue for all the communities. I mean, you could be sort of a diversity inspector for all of them, not just the gay and lesbian community.
That's true. And look, in the last few years, the changes in Victoria Police are not imaginary. It's not just me sort of sitting here telling you that. They're very real. I've seen an increase in recruitment of people from diverse backgrounds. We certainly have far more women than we ever used to have. We have an increase in the number of people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds joining, and certainly a lot more gay and lesbian members. And what's really heartening is that it makes a real difference when a sergeant, a senior sergeant, or an inspector at your police station is openly gay, because it makes you feel very secure. And increasingly, members are coming out and being very comfortable and open in their sexual orientation.
We've certainly got a large number of gay and lesbian employees. I do regular presentations at the Constables course at the Academy, and I can tell you that just about every presentation I have somebody come up to me at the end saying, thank you very much, that was great to hear, I'm gay or lesbian employee. So they're definitely out there, definitely increasing.
Gabby?
We have another SMS message. Great to hear the interview with Mark Keane. He and others in Victoria Police were great support to me in my time as New Zealand's highest out gay police member. Well done on your promotion, Mark Richards.
I know Mark very well, so hi to Mark and thank you very much for the kind words.
Fantastic.
Just before we finish up and say goodbye, picture this. So I'm sitting at home. I'm about 18. I'm not out. My friends are a lot sort of butcher than I am and basically pick on me for being gay. But I'd love to be a police officer, but I'm not sure about taking that step. What would you say to any gay, lesbian or transgender person who's wanting to apply but is a bit afraid to?
I would say follow your dream. It's as simple as that. Don't let your sexual orientation or your personal circumstances dissuade you from doing what you really want to do. But I would encourage anyone that's interested in policing as a career to do some homework. Go and visit your local police station. Speak to friends you may have who know something about police or who may even be police. I'm happy to speak to people. Anyone that's interested, I'm more than happy to sit down with them, and I'm sure Scott and Gabby are the same.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Because we welcome diversity, and there is no one type of person that makes up the ideal police officer. We want diversity. We understand that that's what makes us a stronger organisation and better able to provide community safety.
And there are definitely a lot of gay and lesbian police members who have been in the job for a long time and been through hard times and now still in the job. So it shows that anyone can do the job, and it's a good job.
Well, I would say, just in closing, a very wise person once said that being a police officer is like having a front row seat to the greatest show on earth. It really is. It's a magnificent job.
Scotty Davis and Gabby Tyack, and also Diversity Inspector, Inspector Mark Keane. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.